Hello, this is Russell Westcott, Vice President of the Real Estate Investment Network, and I wanted to share with you a special audio presentation exclusive to the subscribers of the Real Estate Investment Network's real estate research and educational programs. This audio presentation will provide you with a behind-the-scenes look at exactly how professional real estate investor and Canadian best-selling author Don R. Campbell analyzes his properties to maximize his cash flow and achieve success in today's real estate marketplace. This audio program is just one of the many systems that are introduced to you at the Authentic Canadian Real Estate Program, or ACRE program. Make sure you have a pen and paper handy as you'll be taking plenty of notes from this presentation, as you will most likely be listening to this audio program more than once. Without further delay, enjoy this exclusive presentation brought to you by the Real Estate Investment Network.
Property Analyzer Forum is where the rubber hits the road in this game. So what we've done now is we've taken all these properties, we've run them through that we know that we're going to buy in a geographically specialized area. Each one of you will have your own. And then you will start moving up the ladder. You'll kind of go, okay, this property kind of has potential for cash flow. And then we move to the next level where it starts to look like we've got a cash flow, and then we've got vendors somewhat motivated. And now we've done a little bit of due diligence, say, hey, yeah, this property has a lot of potential. But how much potential really does it have? Because what are the two words? What are the key two words that we're looking for in every property? Cash flow. That's what we're looking for. Because if we don't, we're just putting too much risk into our portfolio and into our lives. I don't want the risk. You don't want the risk. And then when the inevitable downturn comes again, be it 4 years from now or 7 years from now or 11 years from now, you won't care because you focused on the cash flow, not on the eating what you kill strategy of real estate, which is constantly buying and moving and flipping and doing and ba-do-ba-doo. My favorite word in the English language, one of my favorite words in the English language is and. And somebody goes, well, you know, we're doing some of the raw and the grand stuff. I can't do the buy and hold stuff. It's like people say, you know what? I only invest in stock. I don't invest in real estate, or vice versa. I said, what happened to the magic word and? Isn't the ultimate goal to run your business so that it makes the most money to help drive your personal beliefs? Yes or no? Yes. So don't put yourself into a compartment if you're going to come across a property. You become a transaction engineer after a while. You start to look at it and go, you know what? This property doesn't fit this system that we're learning today, but I know somebody who it might help. Give it to them in their system. You know, that do whatever it takes to build your business strong, slow. Slow businesses are okay. And with based on income and cash flow. And then you can have a good time on the way up. All that gravy comes in, and then when the market flattens out or slows down, everybody else can bitch and moan, and you can hear from your beach in Belize on your phone going, boy, you seem to be complaining a lot. Oh, anyway, my check's deposited, right? Yes, it is. Okay, good. Thank you. Bye. Click. We're going to analyze a property right now, a townhouse on the pink sheet, by the way. And we're going to start running through some of these numbers and why this is the most important form for every single property that you're going to buy. Never, ever skip this step. Don't skip any steps, but if you're going to skip any steps at all, this is definitely not one to do it. Now, a property analyzer such as this is built into that REMA software. So if for all you guys who like to do it electronically, it's already built in there. It's also in the software in the back of this book, in the back of the book, and it's a free version, full version of analysis. So it's like this, and it's software. You can get it in the back of the new version 2.0. But seriously, I do it this way. Russ does it this way. Patrick does it this way. A lot of veteran RAIN members do it by hand with a calculator and a pen because it becomes second nature for me. I don't want to screw with my system. So we're going to say it is the decision maker. We have not made a decision to buy yet. We're getting close. But this will tell us yes or no at the end of the day. It walks us through all of the expenses and all of the revenue sources, and it really puts it all into one sheet. The other thing it does is it proves your intention in an audit. It proves your intention was, obviously, to buy it as a cash flow property. And every once in a while, you buy a property with the intention of it being a cash flow property, and then 2 years down the road, for whatever reason, you get a ridiculous offer from either a developer or a neighbor or a friend or, you know, somebody who's willing to overpay for that property. Now, if you could, under CRA rules, be deemed that being a flip, even though it's 2 years. And as Navaz was talking about on Friday night, talking about, then you're full tax. It's not a capital gain anymore. Your job as a buy and hold investor, you can still take the check. You're okay, as long as you have proof of your intention to move and a bit of an argument that you can at least have something to stand on. Say, listen, I was going to buy it as a matter of fact, I bought it as a cash flowing property. Here's all my analysis. Here's all my due diligence. Here's all my stuff. Obviously, my intention was that it just happened to be that, you know, somebody was willing to pay me 25% more than it was worth, or 20% more than I thought it was worth. So the opportunity came to sell it. If you haven't done any of this homework, you could have that thing deemed as a non-capital gain and pay tax on the whole profit. Rather than in a capital gain, you get taxed on 50% of the profit. I like to get taxed on less than more. It's totally up to you how you like to, but I prefer to be taxed at less. So you keep this in your binder. It also becomes a part of the document that you send, the sophisticated investor binder that you send to your banker, because this proves that you've done some work on this property. Makes a huge difference. We say, oh, by the way, you know, I've analyzed the cash flow, et cetera. Here's what the numbers look like. Boy, when the bank sees that, it gives them such a warm and fuzzy, because now you're starting to think like a banker a little bit, you know, risk mitigation, et cetera. So let's talk. You know, the number one lesson that people learned in the downturn of 08, 09 was that they should never, ever, ever ignore the importance of positive cash flow. Because if you had positive cash flow, you wouldn't even be worried. But if everything was squeaky, squeezing, and you had no nickels left, and you were just nothing, everything was break even, and all you were doing was making money on equity appreciation, boy, that puts you in a bit of a precarious position. So that's why we go back to the math, go back to the math, go back to the math. And I think I have said that enough times that I'm hoping that it's getting boring. I'm hoping that that statement's getting boring. That means that you've then normalized it, and that's what I want. If you can't afford to hold it, don't buy it. Number one, okay, moving on. Here we go, property analyzer. Let's take a look at the top. You can look at the goldenrod version. I've given you a blank that you can use to photocopy for your personal use for however many times that you want to analyze different properties. But let's talk about the goldenrod color filled in one. Obviously, the information is quite simple on the top. You're going around 12345 Avenue, 219,500. Look at me. I negotiated $400 off the price of this townhouse. Nice job, eh? $219,900, $219,500. But we're going to go with these numbers. Carpet replacement, okay? Will require flooring on the main floor. So we know that it needs carpet. So we know the carpet replacement. So it's going to cost us X number of dollars because most of it's hardwood. But on the main floor, we could put some carpet down for a couple of grand. You need the name of the owner and the name of the owner's realtor, because you're going to need all that information with the lawyer in the future, so you might as well capture it now. Now, this townhouse has 3 bedrooms. It rents for $1,495. It should rent for $1,625, $1,625. But how will I know that number? Help me out. How would I know that number that it's under-rented? Excellent. Hey, this is working, man. I'm being geographically specific. I know that neighborhood already. Now, if somebody sent me this and it was in Barrhead, I would have no idea what it would rent for. I'd have to phone Colin and say, Colin, what do you think? And Colin would say, I'm too busy to talk to you, Don, as always. And But, right, I would have to go to somebody who lives in the town and do all that homework and what should I buy it in Barrhead and all that kind of stuff. In this case, because I know my neighborhood, because I know that it's a townhouse, it's three bedrooms, I already know that it's going to rent for about $1,625. There are a lot of very lazy landlords out there that think that keeping the rent low is a way in which to keep tenants. It's not, as we'll find out this afternoon. It's just a lazy way to manage your business. Because if you want to go into charity, because that's what, 100 and what? How much is that? 130 bucks a month? Right? Yes? Okay, what's 130 bucks times 12? You all have calculators. Don't look at me. I'm 130 times 12. It's like 1,500 bucks, right? Something like that? 1,460? 1,560. So why not get your income back up to where it should be for the market? Be smart about it on your marketing, which we'll do this afternoon. And take that 1560, give it to Habitat for Humanity, get a tax receipt for that charity and use that on your tax receipt instead of just throwing the money away. If you're going to do charity, do it properly under the Canadian charitable laws where you can get a tax rebate. Here, you're just giving money away. Not only that, but if your rent is below market value, then what you should be, so is your property, because as Peter was showing us quite clearly, positive cash flow makes all of the difference in the world when you're trying to get future financing. So being lazy will eat your lunch over the long term. So I know it's $1,625. I do know that I want to make sure that this increased date is September the 1st. Okay? So when is the next time that I can increase the rent on that property? September the 1st would be next September the 1st in just about every province now. It's at least a year in advance. So I know that I can get the rent up to that at September the 1st. I'm going to show you how to do that. Raise the person's rent and have them thank you for it. I get thank yous all the time when I raise rents. It's the most bizarre thing, but it's all in the language that you use. Oh, every time I raise a rent, people are PO'd. Well, then you're doing it wrong. Quite clearly. So, need clean, no lease, blah, 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 blah. So you take the rent. This is only one rent. Now, if you had a garage, where would you put that? Obviously, a townhouse doesn't have a garage. You would put it here. Garage. $200, because generally most people haven't rented out. $200. And then you add that to your projected rent, so you know what your income will be. And then you flip it over, and now you're starting to get to those guys who are going, well, what about utilities, and what about all this stuff? So in this case, the utilities are electric, and electric are paid, thank goodness, by tenants in 99% of the cases. Electricity is paid by the tenant, so you see how that kind of correlates. The water and sewer, because it's a townhouse, often 99% of the condos are townhouses are in condos. So the water and sewer is paid by my condo fee, as is the snow clearing, as is the, you know, whatever it is. My taxes, as you see, you factor that in. What's your property taxes? $78. I always project higher than last year, because taxes go down or up. Down, taxes always go up. Especially property taxes. So you're going to say, I project up what my expectation is, and I know what my expectation is because I have talked to the city and I know my region. And then I say the insurance. Now, the insurance in this case is covered by the condo insurance, you know, the blanket insurance on the property. But I would start adding the condo guard on it. The condo guard, now, where is Brian? Is Brian in the room? Brian, I'm asking you a question that I haven't set you up for, so help me out here. Does the condo guard give me a rent protection as well? Okay, so the condo guard program is, so most people just say, well, the condo covers it, and then the tenant covers their own stuff, so I don't really have to do anything on the insurance side. But here's what happens. When that property inevitably burns down, how do I know? Suddenly, you have no income because nobody's living in that property because, you know, four or five of the townhouses have all burnt and whatever the case may be, whatever the reason is, it's uninhabitable. So now you're not getting any income because I'm telling you, the tenant's not living in there, they're not paying you. Does the bank care? They want their mortgage payment on the first of the month. And here's what happens. If you got like a condo guard's pretty darn cheap too because most of this stuff is covered already, Brian. $20 a month. Jeez. $20 a month for sleeping at night. Because what happens is the condo guard will now pay you what the market rent, what rent you were getting until that thing is back to being inhabitable. So it'll pay you the 1600, what is it? $1,625 every month until it's rebuilt and it's habitable and the guy's moved back in. So would that be worth a bit of a sleep at night? To me, absolutely. And this is a new addition because we've never had condo guard before. So usually the whole building and complex is covered by the condo corporation's insurance. But remember, you didn't negotiate that insurance deal. You have no idea what's in it. Under the condo, and of course you can look at it and review it, but you probably can't change it. This will help give you that extra, and there's a bunch of extra coverages within that, if I remember correctly. It's not just the rental income, right? There's a whole coverage package, because and it's replacing of the appliances and any of the internal stuff, like the floors, any of the internal stuff is generally your responsibility anyway, correct, under insurance? So if you've now gone through and put in laminate floor and a special type of countertop and black appliances, you don't put stainless appliances in, by the way. They're just fingerprint monsters, and they look like crap. The black ones look great because they're really easy to clean. But if you've done that and you've proven that, the insurance will get your property up to that level again. If you're doing the condo, guess what level they'll bring it up to? What everybody else has done out there, and that's probably the crappy carpet and the crappy countertops and all the, you know, the entry level stuff that a lot of these things are done. So add that in there. You could put that in under insurance. In this case, it says condo. You can add another $20 on there if you want. And the property management, it says 7% here. I pay anywhere, depending on the property and the location and how many units they've got, anywhere between 4 and 10%. On property management. What that includes is them putting the tenants in, managing the property. In some of the buildings, I've got an on-site, you know, you've got a resident manager. If you've got 20 or more probably 30 or more, you're gonna wanna have a resident manager on-site. That averages about $15 a door. But property management, that's called leverage fee. That's all that is I hire a company to do all of the legwork. I still write the ads. I still write all the marketing and tell them what to do and where to put it. I still take full responsibility for that. But I manage the managers, and that's the important part. So in here, 7%. 7% of what? Help me out. 7% of the gross rent. So if they don't collect any rent that month, they don't get paid. That's how I like incentives, by the way. So in this case, 7% vacancy allowance. Your property at one point or another will be vacant. Sorry to tell you that, but that's the reality of it. So why not factor that into your budget every single month? So 4% of your average, in this case, what I'd like to do is use roughly twice what CMHC says that region's vacancy rate is, because I'm a conservative investor. So if it in this case, when we did this one, the vacancy rate was 2%, and so I doubled it, and we used 4%. So 4% of gross rent goes into my budgeting. Remember, this is just a budget analysis. I don't have to actually write that out every month. You know that, right? I don't write the check to CMHC or to some vacancy thing. It's just a budgeting thing. Rental pool, that's if it's in a rental pool, quite often you'll be charged 0.5% or something. The repairs and maintenance. Now, if I remember correctly, and if you read this, it's pretty nice, clean, and tidy. It just needs some flooring. So that's about 5% to me. If it's an older building that hasn't been renovated and needs a little bit more work and is in a bit of a rougher kind of transition area, I'll bump that up to 8, 9, 10%. If it's brand spanking new, which I don't own anything that's brand spanking new, but if it's brand spanking new, this thing would be like 1 or 2%. But believe me, it's never zero. You will be fixing things, period. You'll be fixing things throughout the ownership of the property. So what we're finding is that, and the resident manager in this case, because there's a, I have to pay to the condo, the condo management company, a $15 fee so they can have a resident manager live in the whole complex. Just so that's what that $15 is. So in this case, I have got about $540 worth of expenses, projected expenses. And I have, what was the rent? 15 something? 1625. So you do that, and you end up with $1,085 positive cash flow. That's pretty good, eh? Yeah? Yeah? Is it right? Is it right?
No.
Of course it's not right. There's a kind of a key expense that we're going to talk about, and that's the bank. The bank likes to get paid. So before you turn your page over, I want to talk about a couple of these things. Now, understand, on the budget side, we're budgeting about $1,085 of cash to pay mortgaging, etc. Here's what happens. I do not have to pay out this vacancy allowance of $65 every month. It's just a budgetary figure, so I'm conservative. Here's what also happens. I don't have to pay out the $81.25 every month. I'm just analyzing it from a conservative point of view to know what it's, how it's going to perform. Might in month six, I have to pay, $400 to repair something. So that's 6/8 or 48. So that's $480 that I've budgeted for the year already. And so it'll come, it won't come in $81 a month dribs and drabs. It'll come in usually 2 weeks after you buy it and the hot water tank explodes. Just so you know. How do I know? So those figures add up to 146 dollars, right? The vacancy allowance and the repairs and maintenance. So really, as far as cash flow goes from a banker's perspective, etc., you can add $150 onto here, $146 onto here. But because we're super smart investors, we don't take that into, or actually we subtract that number, right? Off of the expenses, we add it onto here. We still only analyze ultra conservative, because if it works with these numbers, you know it's going to work crazy like. So we take that. Oh yeah, this is a new one. I've got to remind everybody, please add $10 to $20 a door, depending on how many doors you've got, etc. $10 to $20 a door under the other factor here for bookkeeping/accounting. Now, bookkeeping is something that needs to be done every single month on an ongoing basis. Raise your hand if you are still doing your own bookkeeping. It's okay. It's okay. Okay. So what do you pay? What do we pay an average bookkeeper nowadays in the city of Calgary? Anybody? Who's got a bookkeeper right now that they're doing their properties? Yeah, $30 to $40 an hour. Okay. So by doing your bookkeeping, you're just valued yourself at only $30 to $40 an hour. Understand that. Yeah, but there's not that much. And is it, I don't know. It's like you're justifying wasting your time. As soon as you possibly can, get it into somebody else's hands so they can just pop it into QuickBooks for you and you do it. Because when do you inevitably do bookkeeping? 10 o'clock at night, when the kids have all gone to bed, the time where you might want to be spending on your relationship instead of in front of the computer, or maybe not, who knows, maybe your relationship is on the computer, but that's a different story. But really, whatever you're doing and you're not delegating, that's how you're valuing yourself. I tell you right now that if you're valuing yourself at only $30 to $40 an hour, you're not understanding how much money you can make in real estate. Because all it takes is you being too busy doing receipts. Oh, donut receipts. Okay, that goes down. Memorized transaction donuts. Okay, click $5. Oh, down it's $560. Now I got to change this. And what's the GST? All that stuff. You know how many properties have just zipped by you and how many deals you've missed by spending your time justifying that, I'll do my bookkeeping myself? I'll tell you, it makes a huge difference once you pop up and say, wow, how many, even if I saved $1,000 in the deal, on the next deal, because I have a little bit more brain space. How many hours is that divided by $40 an hour? 500? Think about, not 500, 50. 50 hours, so 25 hours you've just saved. You could have just paid somebody 25 hours. You've just missed out on $1,000, that's all. But I'm telling you, when we're talking real estate, it's tens and twenties and thirties of thousands of dollars that you're missing out because you're monkeying around with receipts. So please factor in $10 to $20 a month. Even if you continue to do it, at least pay yourself, okay? So you take your projected income, which comes from the bottom there, projected 1,085, and you put it on the top. And you go up top there, on 1,085 bucks. Now we have to start paying the bank. This case, we got a $175,600 mortgage. That means it was at 5.25, it was three years, and $908.02 is the monthly payment on that. It's principal and interest, because why don't we put PIT? Taxes, yeah, and why don't I put the taxes on here? Beautiful. I've always accounted for them at the beginning, on the front page, right, in our monthly expenses, 74 bucks or whatever it was. So, principal and interest, 908, 1,085 revenue, net cash flow, $176.98. That, for me, is a perfectly awesome deal because I've already factored in 100 and some odd dollars in expenses that I'm not going to be paying out every single month. So because I've been so conservative, this is a fantastic deal for me. Now, so that's that. We're going to change some of the variables and show you how to analyze. But projected purchase price was $219,500. First funding is that. So in other words, I got first mortgage of $175,000. I have to come up with $43,900 to get that $176.98 a month. Okay, that's all right. It's not bad. I think if you did the ROI, knowing that you've bought in the right town, etc., a lot of people would really, really like this deal, including myself. But is it only $43,900 that you have to come up with? No, it is not. It's a lot more than that. And this is where people forget. You're going to have all these closing costs, like $300 professional inspection, a value appraisal of $200 to $300 to $500. You've got the real property report, which Barry just taught us to ask for at the beginning. Mortgage broker fees, hopefully there aren't any. If a mortgage broker's charging you a fee, it better be on a commercial mortgage or a private lend. Legal costs, $1,000, $1,200. Each province has a different kind of run. Staying power fund, this is the key. Every single property you have, and believe me, after 10 or 12 properties, this gets painful a little bit. Every single property must have a reserve fund sitting in its bank account, waiting for the inevitable thing to blow up. I call this my sleep at night fund. I would write sleep at night fund right beside staying power fund right here. It just kind of takes the edge off. It's like a calmness that comes over. And what that is about 1 month of income, right? 1,085? 1 month of income sitting in the account. Quite often, you'll have 2 or 3 months, depending on the age of the property. If it's new, you know, you can have a month sitting there. If it's, you know, 20 years old, you probably want to have 2 months sitting there because more things break. And here's what happens. Although you've budgeted for a repair and maintenance fund on the front, you know, whatever we decide, I think it was 5% on this one, that still doesn't mean that you've got that money sitting there. It's just a monthly budgetary thing. What this does is it sits in the bank account and it waits for something to go wrong. And it waits. It's like almost like a mini insurance. So what happens is, you know, inevitably when the hot water tank blows up, is right after you've written this big check to buy the next property, and you were just kind of squeezing all the dough you had, and you just kind of put it together, and you put it on, and you send it away, and then after you hit the send button, your phone rings. That's what happens, inevitably. But now, because you've got these reserve funds, you kind of the manager will phone and say, listen, your hot water tank blew, it stopped working, we need to get a new one, it's $800 or whatever it is. You kind of go, great, no problem, take care of that. Instead of like, oh my God, where am I going to get that? I've got my Visa Max, I got my all this does is it allows you to sleep at night. Now, when you have 16 or 20 properties, that's pretty tempting little pot of money, 20 times $1,000 sitting there. Do not touch it. Don't touch it. I'm not kidding you. First off, think how cool this is. It starts to show, when you go to the bank, you have to show a place where the down payment may come from. Notice the no quotes. May come from. What you show the bank about where it may come from doesn't mean that's where the money has to come from. Because they don't care where the money comes from. They just want to know that right at the closing time, you're not going to pull the chute and say, sorry, I don't have any money. So what this does is you've got this little pot of dough that's sitting on the right-hand side. It's helping you sleep at night, but it's also helping you get your deal done at the bank. So it's just showing that you've built this up, and it slowly builds up, and so your hot water tank blows, you write the check, and then you start taking that 5% or whatever it was out every single month out of your cash and building that back up. Build that cash reserve back up for that property, and then you're fine and you're sleeping at night again. It is such a wonderful, wonderful feeling when four hot water tanks blow up on the same week. I'm just using that as an experience. And you just go, okay, this is really starting to drive me crazy. Okay, this better not be the property management company. Okay, another one. And you've got the money sitting there. It's already allocated for you. You've already budgeted for it. It is so much nicer to live that way. Even when it's your very first property and you're kind of scraping the money together to even buy your first property, you've got to do this or you will hit a wall. I've seen too many people hit a wall because they didn't budget properly. $2,000 for renovations, that was that flooring, right? $300 for title insurance, if you're going to use title insurance, property insurance. In this case, we didn't have to buy any because it was a condo, but we're going to buy that condo guard. But we factored it in our monthly budget, so we don't have to put it there. But you can put it either spot. So $20 a month times 12 is $240. So you can put $240 there because you probably have to write a check. Not often do insurance companies take monthly payments. And here, you know, land transfer taxes. If you're buying in any other province other than Alberta, you have to factor in what your land transfer tax, because they want that money now. They don't want it in the future. They don't want it anywhere. The lawyer's going to take that out of the pot at the end of the day. And so you've got to understand that all this stuff is going to come out of your pocket. So that's another $5,000 that a lot of people forget about. So they're kind of getting their down payment together, but they forget that there's $5,000 of other costs and associated strategies built into it. So in essence, it's going to cost you $48,830 to close instead of $43,000, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And at the bottom, you see, does the property get you closer to your vision or farther away? If it's strongly negative cash flow, it will probably take you farther from your vision. If it's not in your geographic region, it'll probably take you farther. But if it fits all the other stuff, it gets you closer. You know, and at what price would I buy this property for it to cash flow? That's just a fun little tool to say, keep driving up the mortgage rate, okay? I mean, the amount of mortgage on the top there, and see where it starts to break even or get close to zero. That way you can factor in how much you can maximum pay for that property so you don't ever overpay if you have to get in a competitive bid situation and you really want it. It's just a fun little thing. You don't need to do that part of the analysis. But what it is it going to be managed, yes or no? And the answer is it bloody well better be managed well, either by you or somebody, because that is now your business. That property is your business. You need to attract clients to it. You need to manage the cash flow of it. And it, you know, does it, there's the questions. We talked about that. So, a couple of things you want to write down. These any of these senior things are not anywhere. So that you know, they're newer stuff. We're going to risk mitigate some more. Even though we've built in this lovely buffer, we're going to risk mitigate some more. And that is, we're going to pressure test our system. And all you do is you start increasing the interest rate on the mortgage that you've done on the very top of that form, on the goldenrod form. You start changing the interest rate, and you start seeing, does it make sense at 6%? Does it make sense at 6.75 or 6.5? And you just keep bumping it up. It's pretty easy to do. Online calculators are everywhere. Make sure it's Canadian. Canadian mortgage calculator. There's one for your iPod now, a Canadian one that you can quickly do the thing. I think there's one on BlackBerry now, a BlackBerry app. But there's difference between a Canadian and American way that they do mortgages. And then what you'd find out is, what is the most I can pay on an interest rate? And the interest rate could be the most you could pay is this, or it could be another 2% up. That all it does is it helps you decide when you want to lock in. That's so simple. I'm still going variable on all these smaller units because I know the gap is so cheap. But when the market starts to go up, I'll already know at what level this thing will cash flow, so I can lock it in at 5.25. That makes sense, yeah? Yeah, conservative stuff. How low can you go? How little money out of your pocket can you go? Can you pay and have it still cash flow? That's the next question we're going to talk about. And this is how it goes. What if we used a secure line of credit for that down payment? Like, so you've got equity in your house, you get a secure line of credit against it. That secure line of credit is interest only, and it is at prime, generally. Do not go to Hawaii with that line of credit. Do not mix personal stuff with investing stuff in your line of credit, or you will get audited, and it will hurt a lot. So they'll just say, it's obviously not an investment. Find the balance of reducing out-of-pocket. So let's take a look at how we might want to do this. Instead of 43,900. So instead of spending 43,900 as our down payment, etc., why don't we take 40,000 of that? We happen to have $5,000 floating around. So why don't we take 40,000 of this and put it on a line of credit that's going to be a lot cheaper than 575, right? It's going to be at prime, which is 2.25. You're going to get it's super cheap right now. So we borrow the line of credit. We borrow the down payment on the line of credit. The banks are okay with that because they consider that as cash because it's on your house. You're no longer writing the check. You're just writing the monthly payment for that, and it's interest only because it's on your house, all right? Now understand, you got to look at negative cash flow things that we talked about yesterday. However, in this case, we would go $191.67 would be the monthly payment at 575. So it's going to be like half of that, roughly, at today's interest rate. So it's going to be like $90. But you might as well, pressure test the system. So 575. So now we have a projected income of $1,085, and we have a debt service, which is the mortgage and the line of credit, for $1,099. It's minus $14.69. Is it really minus $14.69? Yes or no? No. What is it really? What are we just budgeting on the front? It was about $140, something like that, for the vacancy and the repairs and maintenance. So really, you're still in the good about $120 a month. That's how the banks will be analyzing it. See, we analyze it a little bit differently than the banks. The banks have all these different rules. This is us. This is real cash flow in our pocket. So now, instead of writing a check for $40,000+, we're only writing a check for closing costs and a monthly payment on our line of credit. Do you think that our return on investment has skyrocketed substantially by doing so? Yes or no? Absolutely. So let's take a look at that. $528.84, even if we have to pay all these budgeted money out, So for a three-year period, it's going to cost us $528 to do this game instead of $40,000. So here's what our payments are. Here's what we actually down payment is, $3,900, not $48,000, whatever the heck it was, $43,900. So that's why the banks are our friends, because they're willing to give us money to go put into the market so that we can make our margin, so that we can stretch our investment dollars farther. Does this make sense, yes or no?
Yes.
Great, excellent. Who said no? Because if no, there's lots of us who want to answer the question, because this is a pretty important thing to grasp before lunchtime. I don't want to use the word embarrassed, but you just prefer to ask this question in private, that's great, because at lunchtime, et cetera, there's going to be lots of us who answer this math question. But if you do line of credit, your only out-of-pocket is the monthly payment. It is not a, even though you're writing a check that looks like a check for $40,000, it's just a, it's what's out of your, that's bank's money. What's out of your pocket is the $191. So, I like $3,900 versus $43,900 out of my pocket. Now you've got to obviously factor in, and now to buy this property at about $110, $120 really in positive cash flow, the required cash to close is $8,800 of my money, of real life money. So when people say no money down and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have to ask them about closing costs. Oh, so no money down means I don't have any closing costs or nothing? Oh, wow, that's a great deal, Mr. American Teacher. The reality is it's going to cost me $8,800 to buy this property that's in the right geographic area, that is already, the guy was motivated, the due diligence looks good, the cash flow starting to look good, and it's going to take me closer to my ultimate Belize up here. How simple is that? I'm not going to Belize today, by the way. I'm not going to stand on the top of that. I only did that once. So, yeah, is that open up your brain a little bit? Yes or no? I need some feedback here, please, because if you don't, it's okay. Wow. Yeah. Now get it. You have to understand that you can monkey the numbers however you want, but always be conservative. The key part is, as you pressure test your system, you can kind of change, and you can adjust the interest rates, you can adjust all kinds of things to know what the deal is. So $8,800, I'm talking about that. So say, for instance, you don't want to, it's not positive cash flow at 20% down, like this one was 20% down, wasn't it, I think? Say, for instance, you want this property. Figure out how much more you put down in order to get it to positive cash flow. So instead of 20% down, what if you put 30% down on this property? Now, you're still using line of credit, remember? It's not your dough. So what if you put 30% down? Would that combination of a lower first mortgage and a tiny little bit higher line of credit, because remember, the payments are so tiny on a line of credit because it's interest only, would that make it positive cash flow? Because people, I think that the masses obsess, you guys don't, but the masses obsess about how how can I steal this property is pretty well what a lot of people want to do. They want to get it way below market value. They don't want to put any money into it, and it should give, one property should give them a $12,000 a month positive cash flow. That seems to be what people think out there. Why not manage this like the business that it is? And say, okay, well, in this case, I know that it's undervalued. So I'm going to put down, 30% down, because then it'll cash flow for a year. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to do some nice renovations inside of it. I'm going to get the rent up to a certain level. And then what I'll do is I will refinance it. And then net, at the end of the day, 18 months from now, I'll probably be only in for about 15% down. Because based on the value, obviously not based on the new appraisal, because the appraised value will have gone up, and then I just refinance it, and then I take out a lot of dough, and then I go use that money somewhere else, and net, at the end of the day, I'll be 15% down instead of the 20% down, and it'll be all legal, above board. There's so many ways in which to analyze a property that as you go through it, what the most important part is not what you're doing today, It's how is it going to look? What strategy can I do? Am I going to be able to get my income up? Am I going to be able to add value to that property? Am I going to do that? What's that property going to look like 18 months from now? So maybe here's a strategy. If you've got a lot of cash, and I know there's a bunch of you in here who are sitting on a ton of cash. One strategy that we're using is buying the property for cash, literally for cash. So it's what? How much was this? $219,000. It's a lot of dough for a lot of people, right? However, you buy it at $219,500, and then you bring it into your portfolio. You have, you know, you don't have any payments or anything, so it's going to cash flow like crazy at the beginning. And during that period of time, you're going to bump the rent up. You're going to add value to the property. It's going to take you 6-7 months, right? Maybe 6 months. Let's just do 6 months. You get the rent up. You add the value. You do the repairs that are required, and you go through that process, and then you go and finance it. Do banks like refis better than purchases? Yes or no? Absolutely. Well, you've proven that you've owned this property for 5-6 months. So then what you do is then you go in, you say, I'd like to refinance this property that I own. I have a lot of equity in it, and you've got the new rental income. Your portfolio looks like a genius. Remember that when you pitch the deal to the bank, you've got your portfolio. Would not that property being a massive positive cash flow really dramatically affect your positive cash flow in your portfolio? Yes or no?
Yes.
See, it's not about how much money you get into the deal and right today. It's how much do you have in it at the end of the day. So then you go and finance it, and you get 20% down. Generally, when you're buying now, it's a little more difficult to get 20% down deals. You go and you refinance it. You've got higher revenue. Dave, I'm telling you, for apartment buildings, if you can find a way to do this, it's unbelievable what you can do. You can get in for no money down on an apartment building. You can get in for no money down on these townhouses. It's just not no money down today. It's no money down 6 months to a year from now. You have no money in the deal. The thing's cash flowing. You've taken all your money out, and you've gone and reinvested it somewhere else. Da-da-da-da. Have we not done this, Dave? Have you? You've done this. It is superlative. So when you're negotiating the deal, they don't know that you're paying cash. They don't know all this. It's just all about your management of your company. Now I've got this pot of cash. This is you speaking. I got this pot of cash. I'm going to go buy this townhouse. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to renovate it. I'm going to do this. I know exactly how to add value. I'm following the Arlen Dahlin, Michael Milner renovation secrets. I know exactly how to do it cheaply, although it adds a ton of value. Then I get a new appraisal. You don't even need an appraisal when you buy it. Think about how less cost it's going to cost you when you buy it. Then I'm going to get a new appraisal. I'm going to take that appraisal, and I'm going to take it to the bank with my unbelievably fantastic positive cash flow portfolio, because that property's in there, but I don't have any mortgage, so I'm going to be getting probably cash flowing. What was the number at the top? 1,085 plus 150, right? Because that's the budgetary stuff. So that property alone is going to be cash flowing at $1,200, $1,300. And throw that into my portfolio. I'm going to go in there. The bank is going to love me, kiss me, and give me donuts instead of me giving them donuts. And I'm going to say, I'd like to refinance this thing. And the new value is now 20% higher than what I purchased because I've added value to it. And then I go in, and if it's 20% more than I purchased it, and I go in, I go, you know what? I'd like to refinance and take 80% out. Bang, I'm in for no money down in the long term in a proper business sense. Not no money down, I've screwed people over. This is all about long-term investing. And then what you do, 5-6 years from now, you can do it again with the same property, or 3 years from now. You can take it, because if you bought in the right market, it's just going to have gone up a little bit, your mortgage is going to come down, and then you can take some more money out, or not, it's up to you. And then you just keep analyzing, you keep moving your mortgages around, you keep analyzing cash flow. It's freaking brilliant. Sorry, that was a bit of a rant, but that's how I would do it. I don't usually teach that part at Acre. I don't know where that came from. It must have been you, Dave. I'm sorry. But no, don't applaud. Just think about it. Think about how you cash manage. How can you do this? It's not about late night TV. I'm telling you that right now. It had nothing to do with late night TV. How to screw the people over and squeeze as much money out of it and then put as little money down and then tell the bank that you're moving in and all that kind of stuff. None of that stuff. So if you've got the cash, or you have a joint venture partner, or you have access to private money is perfect for these little short little jaunts. The private money, I'll pay 12% all day long if I can get in at the end of the day for less than nothing down sometimes, get money back on the end of the day. Is it significantly undervalued? Hopefully. Does it have to be? Absolutely not. Because I know that when I manage it, I'm managing it for the cash flow. If I can get it and I can negotiate a couple of grand and it's 10, 12, 50 grand below market value, depending on the size of the building, etc., that's great. I hear people going, oh, you make money when you buy. Well, that's a wonderful little cute little saying that everybody says, right? You make money when you buy. Ron LeGrand says that. You make your money when you buy. I'm going to make you rich. You know how he does that? He always does that long note there. Really? I make money by managing my properties and owning the properties. That's where my money comes from. If I save $3,000 or $5,000 up front, that's fabulous. That's great. But $3,000 to $5,000, although it may seem like a lot of money right now, it sure in heck doesn't seem like a lot of money 5, 10 years from now if you didn't get the deal. Because you have $3,000 or $2,000 or $1,000, you turned into a negotiating maniac. I know somebody who was going to buy in Fort McMurray and didn't end up buying up there because of some of these deals. But oh, sorry, Dave. I didn't mean to bring that up. I'm sorry. So you don't have any of that stuff that you can throw, can you? And if you're going to do if you're going to be doing any of these quickie turn things, or you know that you've got it significantly undervalued, make sure you have the buyer lined up already. Because, you know, inevitably you're signing a contract. You're going to have to close on that property or you're going to have some penalties, etc. So that's one way to think about it. But seriously, get back to the cash flow thing. That way of using, if you've got a $300,000 or $400,000 line of credit sitting on the side, use it to your advantage. Use it to your advantage. A lot of people in Calgary, especially Calgary and Edmonton, have a ton of equity in their business and or their home, their property, with which you can start to use that dough or that equity to, you know, like buying cash or buying half cash or doing any of these types of things, assuming a mortgage. Say, for instance, it's a prime minus 0.9 mortgage, which I have a few of. Whew, they're fun. What's prime? 2.2 minus 0.9, free. And they're going to come due, but there are some out there. And if you've pulled the mortgage, you find out that it's a prime minus 9 mortgage, and you know you can qualify for that mortgage. You accept that mortgage. Say it's only 100 grand on a $250,000 property. Pay the cash, the rest of it in cash off of your line of credit. Keep that super cheap mortgage. It's so neat that when you start to move numbers around and all these things, you get rid of all this stuff about the littlest money. I'd like to buy this for no money down today. I like to have it no money down a year from now, 18 months from now. I have no money in it and I've gone and I've got something else. I have one building specifically that I have got my money out, not cash flow even, just in appreciation and being smart with how I've done it and done the little renovations. I've got my money out 3 times already and I still own it. And it still cash flows like crazy, Queen Mary Park. God bless you. God bless you. So for every property, please make sure you do an analysis and then use the RAIN team. That's what we're here for. You say, listen, here's what I got. Here's what I got. Here's my analysis. What do you think? Because a second pair of eyes is so important, because especially when you're starting out, it's good to have someone to lean on and kind of look at it and kind of go, wow, this is very important, but what if you did this little bit on it? And you kind of go, wow, I never saw that. I would never have seen that because you don't have the experience or, you know, you get caught up in your deal. The multifamily property analyzer, good timing. Go ahead, hand that out, please. So it's a little bit different when you have a 6-plex or more. You have to do a little bit different analysis, but it's the same game. It's exactly the same game. It's how do you cash manage? How do you positive cash flow? And raise your hand if in the next little while you're thinking about multifamilies. Raise your hand, please. Just take a look around. So I would recommend that you just make a couple of notes about that, you know, maybe all cash or partial cash or assuming the underlying cheap, cheap mortgage, just so you don't forget these thoughts, because these are the kind of thoughts that just start spewing out of me on Sunday that have nothing to do with the agenda, but are like gold. We like to be the best on the planet at everything that we do, and we like to improve at least 10% every single time we do events. We have covered an awful lot today and a lot of new stuff, a lot of exciting new stuff. Have you guys had fun so far this morning? Believe it or not, this is only morning. Yeah, me too.
Once again, this is Russell Westcott, Vice President of the Real Estate Investment Network. And thank you for listening to this special audio presentation. If you are a RAIN member, congratulations for being part of Canada's largest and most successful real estate investing networking groups. This presentation is just one of the many systems you can have access to help you on your journey towards success. If you are not yet a member of the Real Estate Investment Network, I wanted to take a few moments to tell you of the upcoming ACRE programs across Canada. If you'd like to learn from Canada's most trusted and longest running real estate program, which has helped their members to purchase over $3 billion of real estate, then the upcoming ACRE program is for you. The ACRE program is designed to help you navigate through the real estate marketplace and provide you with a step-by-step action plan to become a successful real estate investor. If you'd like more information, you can always click on the link on the webpage you downloaded this audio program, or you can always call our office at 1-888-824-7346, and one of our client care specialists will be more than happy to help you with more information. Call 1-888-824-7346 to get started right away. Thanks in advance, and we look forward to seeing you at an upcoming ACRE program in the future.